Hello, Burlington, and welcome to Net Zero Energy. I'm Jennifer Green, Director of Sustainability for the City of Burlington, where our goal is to reduce and eventually eliminate fossil fuel usage. Today, we're really happy that we've got Ben Rich with us. Ben is the Commercial Energy Advisor at VGS, who's been in Burlington since 2024, coming to us with a background in teaching and physics in particular. But we're really here not so much to talk about Ben's VGS work. Ben, you have some interesting motorcycle diary stories, if I understand correctly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've taken several cross-country trips on electric motorcycles in 2013 through 2017. Crossed the country a bunch of times and collected three countries along the way and all the lower 48 states.
Before we get into the specifics of your trips, tell us about your bike, the specs on your bike.
Yeah, so, well, I've always been kind of a climate warrior, and I've wanted to get as close to zero emissions as possible in my personal life. And so way back in 2008, I got my first electric motorcycle. And so that one was a Vectrex. It went a grand total of 40 miles. It went 100 kilometers per hour, so 62 miles an hour. So technically, it could go on the highway for a short time. And then that got me off gas. That was my first vehicle that got me off gas. And then later in 2012, I got a Zero S electric motorcycle. So it had 9 kilowatt hour battery. It touted 112 mile range, which I did manage to get one time by going 25 miles an hour for like 4.5 or 5 hours. But then I got a 2014 Zero S with a 13 kilowatt hour battery. That one goes about 150 miles on a charge on roads, but then 90 miles on highways. And I got a third party charging system that gave me a full charge in an hour. And now I ride a 2016 Zero SR, and that has a 14.4 kilowatt hour battery, 160 miles of range with like 100 miles on the highway. So like real riding at normal speeds. And I can charge that up in about 45 minutes.
And tell us about the charging, because of course we talk about level one, level two, level three with electric vehicles. Does that include, does that work for bikes as well, motorcycles?
Yeah, totally. So Zeros all come with level one charging, so a regular plug. And on my first cross-country trips, I literally went into the hotel room with my motorcycle and plugged it in next to the TV. And it was really wild, like how easy it was. Because when I went in the first time to ask a hotel owner, like, can I bring my motorcycle into my room? Right. That's a ridiculous request. Yeah. And the guy like didn't even look up from his paperwork. He's like, oh, yeah, sure. No problem. And so I was like, I'm going to tiptoe away so he doesn't change his mind. But like a bunch of other people allowed me to do that, too. So where there is electricity, you can charge an electric motorcycle, electric car, electric bike or whatever. Yeah. Level two charging is what I use for my motorcycle. And I, at one point I had it set up where I could plug in two plugs, at the same time. Or if I went to a 50 amp, post at a RV park, those have enough juice where those would get me going in about 45 minutes. So, really it's just about knowing how to find the power, and then just plugging it in. And then level three charging is what I'd really like on my motorcycle, because the motorcycle battery gets you a much farther distance on the same amount of charge as an electric car. So you have a smaller battery and you can go pretty far with it.
Sure. So at home, what are you using? Do you have a level two?
I do have a level two.
So normally one could use that for a car. That would be, you know, for most folks, they're installing it for their car. You use it for your motorcycle.
Correct.
So if you were to go to level three, you'd be filling it up in no time, charging it up in no time.
Yeah. Due to the overheating of the battery at high charging rates, they limit it. So you can't use the full 100 kilowatts, 200 kilowatts, 350 kilowatts at some stations, which would charge my bike in like, I don't know, 20 seconds.
Right.
It throttles it so that you charge up in about 25 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's the fastest I've heard of an electric motorcycle.
We know a little bit now about charging, about what you've been riding, how far you can go on a charge. Tell us about your adventures.
Yeah, so on one fateful day in early 2013, I got a phone call from someone who said, do you want to go on a cross-country electric vehicle road trip? We've got someone on an electric scooter. You'd be the electric motorcycle. We have an electric bicycle and an electric car. At that time, the Nissan Leaf was the only electric car. And they'll pay for all the hotel rooms. And I thought, that sounds fantastic. I was a teacher at the time. I taught physics and environmental science. And so I had time, not money. And so I, you know, what better way to spend your time than going on an epic road trip? So I did that in 2013. It was incredible. There's a movie made about that that you can find on Vimeo called Kick Gas.
Okay.
And so you have to say that kind of slowly and carefully,
yes,
because you don't offend people. But Kick Gas is a great movie about there were 10 of us on this trip and, you know, traversing the U.S. Back in 2013, wasn't a lot of charging infrastructure at that time. And my favorite part of that trip was we went on Route 66. And Route 66 was the first time you could travel long distances using gas cars. There weren't gas stations everywhere like there are now. And so it was really fitting to travel along Route 66, being an early adopter and doing these epic road trips on electric vehicles where on the exact same route that people did them.
So you felt this connection to those early, early car drivers.
Oh, totally. Totally. We met some amazing people there and visited some fascinating towns, and it was great.
So how has that changed? So that was 2013. You've done more long distance travel on your motorcycle. How have things changed?
Yeah. So 2014, I did a trip across the Midwest, went to like a cousin's wedding, visited a bunch of friends. I'm a semi-professional swing dancer. And so I have a lot of friends across the country who swing dance. And so they would just put me up and I got to like catch up with them after a decade or so. And so for me, these trips became about reconnecting with friends, but I made videos on YouTube, and you can find them either Ben Rich Electric Biker or Ben Swing. And so I would just go and visit friends, but like I would publicize like electric vehicles are here, they're cool. And I would say that they were easy. Now they are. In 2026, it's so easy to travel. And I take road trips in my electric car all the time. But in 2013, 2014, not so much infrastructure. So I really was like, you know, patching it together. Near population centers, there were EV charging stations, level two, level three, not that many level three, but I needed level two. And then where the fun roads are, out in the mountains, there were RV parks.
I see.
And so I would just pull up to an RV park and ask, can I charge up for an hour? And they would usually look at me kind of funny because normally you pull up in an RV park, you're staying overnight. So they would, and a lot of them would say, okay, well, we need you to pay us for the electricity. And I'm like, absolutely. You know, knowing full well it would cost a dollar, maybe two.
Right.
And so at the end, and I actually just rewatched one of the videos I made about this. And I was commenting on how the owner said, you know, like, go take a reading before, take a reading afterwards and let me know. So I was like, okay, 1.3 kilowatt hours at 12.5 cents per kilowatt hour is $1.50. And he absolutely said, you know, go on your merry way. A lot of them said the same phrase, which was funny. They all said, if a dollar's going to put me out of business, I'm in the wrong business. Right. So there was this pride of like, okay, you know, I'm happy to give this to you. And normally at that point, I would have had like this really interesting conversation with them and, you know, deep red states in the middle of the country. And everyone is super fascinated when you have the motorcycle with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another really interesting thing, like the online personas versus in person talking to people about electric vehicles or electric motorcycles. So my favorite road is the Tail of the Dragon in North Carolina, the mountains of North Carolina, Blue Ridge Parkway, that kind of thing, just stunningly gorgeous. And online, if you say you ride an electric motorcycle, people are just like, that's ridiculous, I don't like it, blah, blah, blah. And then you show up at a place where there's basically all Harley riders and sport bike riders, and you park your electric bike there, and people, you know, these big bald dudes in leather jackets kind of walk up to your bike and they put their hand on their chin and they're kind of like, that's got a lot of torque, doesn't it? You know? And so they're used to associating power with sound.
Sure.
Because that's how it always showed up. But now you don't need that. And so that's a real mind shift for a lot of people.
Ben, so tell us about, you've ridden, I guess, an internal combustion engine motorcycle or no? I'm wondering about just performance and if or how you can compare the two.
Yeah, so I haven't ridden them because I got into motorcycles to get off of gas. But the torque is stronger and the horsepower is less. So most electric motorcycles I'm familiar with, like, generally compare about to a 650cc. However, they can take an 1100cc Hayabusa off the line, right? So an 1100cc Hayabusa is a powerful bike. And so because electric motors are simply better at torque, you get off the line quicker than they do. Now, they will pass you, but the immediate torque. And of course, like, when you're in traffic or on street roads, when you're not on a track, which is what most of us are on, you want the quickness, you want the acceleration. You don't need the top speed to be 150, 180, 200 miles an hour, 250. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not using that. But I sure do use that low-end torque every single time I leave a stoplight. And so I get that, like, little fun rush of adrenaline for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's like with my electric car. It's just, it's out of the gate, just
exactly.
The speed out of the gate. But how are you preparing? Like you said, you can't necessarily go anywhere. Sort of, are you thinking about sort of where you're going to be charging, or do you set your destination then figure it out as you go along?
The first trips I did, I definitely pre-planned a lot. Not necessarily before the whole trip, but like as I went, I would know the next day where I planned to charge. But like I said, I was stopping in at RV parks. So like they could say no. And nobody actually said no. There were a couple that were full, so I couldn't charge there. But in like 2016, 2017, I would just kind of go and hope for the best.
It all worked out. And tell us what you think about the trajectory of adoption. Where are we in the upswing?
Well, with motorcycle culture is much stronger on the West Coast. So in California, there are a lot more motorcycles than there are here. And in Florida and the South, Southeast, Southwest, there's more sunny weather, so you can use it all year long. Whereas in Vermont, the moment there's a sunny day in April, suddenly you remember there's motorcycles. Like, they're all over the place now because everyone's just been dying to get right back on them. So their adoption is still kind of slow because there hasn't been the DC fast charging, which is the ability to take road trips is really important to a lot of people because some people use it for a daily commuter, but other people just want it to go ride for the whole weekend. And if you need to be concerned about charging, then that's going to stop people from using it. The charging infrastructure is really the big thing. Less so with motorcycles so far, but they're fantastic as dirt bikes. And so I went around to some of the motorcycle shops in Vermont recently, near Burlington and New Haven, and CycleWise and Roadside Power Sports have dirt bikes. And the great thing about electric dirt bikes is that a lot of dirt bike tracks are in people's backyards. And so their neighbors are going to get mad if they ride them late at night or anytime their neighbor is home, right? They just don't want to hear the brap, brap, brap. So you get an electric one, they can't hear you. So you can ride anytime you want. So there is greater adoption with dirt bikes. And they're fantastic. Like with a dirt bike, you also want a lot of torque.
Well, I was just talking to a friend who was complaining about their neighbor leaving for work early in the morning on a motorcycle and having to speak to their neighbor about how disruptive it was. So thinking about this paradigm shift to quiet, I wonder if the culture's ready. Are we ready to embrace quiet motorcycles, or does the noise and the like the zeitgeist of motorcycles, will that be hard to break?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to take some time, and it's a big culture shift. So somebody made T-shirts that says loud pipes save lives. They don't. The facts are opposite of that. So the main research that's been done in motorcycle safety is the Hurt Report from the 1980s. And they found that there were no changes in instances of any type of accident with loud motorcycles and quiet motorcycles. And so there is no truth to loud pipes save lives. You also think about it, the pipe, what direction is the pipe facing? It's facing backwards. So as you as a motorcyclist are coming up on a car, a lot of times they'll cut you off because they don't see you. Your loud pipes are doing nothing there. And so a lot of times it's just people just want them and they use the safety as an inaccurate argument on their side. Additionally, I used to live near New York City, and I rode my electric motorcycle into New York City all the time. And there was a safety benefit because I could hear the road noise of the tires of the cars right next to me. And so I knew exactly what was going on due to my ability to hear. And as a motorcyclist, I want my safety in my hands. I'm not trusting someone who's on the cell phone, you know, distracted driving, in a car that has soundproofing in it and they're blasting the radio, right? There's so many things that are just going to cause people to just not hear you. So don't pretend that you're putting your safety in someone else's hands because they can hear you. It's not happening. But if you can hear them, now you're genuinely safe.
So, of course, we need to name this podcast episode Motorcycle Diaries, and it would be wrong, Ben, if we didn't ask you for some of those diary-worthy experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to share great experience, good road, bad road?
Yeah, happy to. So my favorite road is the Blue Ridge Parkway. I love Skyline Drive through Virginia, and then the Blue Ridge Parkway through the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina is just beautiful. So if you love road trips and you love riding or driving, like, that's my favorite road. The Pacific Coastal Highway is a very close second. Don't get me wrong. PCH is amazing. My favorite road is the Tail of the Dragon in North Carolina, which is 11 miles long and has 318 turns. It's absolutely a roller coaster of a road. And so that's a blast. My least favorite roads, I-10 in like Louisiana and Texas, and I-95. The closest times I came to having an accident was like in Washington, D.C., where people were just changing lanes, no blinkers, not looking anywhere, distracted driving. Fortunately, I did not get in an accident, but yeah, highways are not where I want to be. I want to be on the side roads, which makes Vermont riding amazing. When I moved here, I just started looking up, like, what are good motorcycle roads? And here I am on my computer, and time is going and going. And I'm like, why am I burning sunlight on my computer? Like, I bet there's lots of good roads in Vermont. And I was right. Every road that I rode on was just, like, phenomenal. So riding through the back roads up to St. Albans or down to Middlebury or down the 100 or up to the Northeast Kingdom, like, all of those, there's just so much great riding. One of my favorite charging stories was at an RV park, which was full, and there were a lot of people who kind of lived there every summer. And so when I was at the office asking if I could charge, they said, you know, we can't do it. So, but then they said, well, wait a minute, let me call my friend. Let's call her Nancy. I can't remember her name anymore, but like, so they call her up and she says, sure, have them come charge. And so I roll up, and it's this woman, she's a grandmother, she's watching a toddler, her granddaughter, who's sleeping. And she said, listen, we can unplug the RV and turn off the air conditioning, but it's a hot day, and if the baby starts crying, we need to plug in the RV again. And I'm like, absolutely, I just need to be able to make it to another RV park where I can charge. So we plug in, and then we start chatting. And I just have like a lovely time, half an hour, something like that, chatted up, and maybe it was 45 minutes. It was like, I got a full charge, no worries about the baby. The baby was fine, and we had this lovely time. But then, as I'm going to unplug, she says, my husband would have loved this because he was a big motorcycler. And like, I just wanted to let you charge because he passed away of cancer a few months ago. And I was just like about to cry into my helmet. And I was just like, you're so kind and thoughtful and nice. And like this, I'm going to remember this moment forever. So there were really touching, poignant moments like that along the road as well.
Ben, this has been a really fun conversation. I'm really inspired and so appreciate you sharing your stories with us. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you again for listening to Net Zero Energy from Burlington Electric Department. If you have any questions about the show or what BED offers regarding rebates or technical support, Look for us at burlingtonelectric.com or call us at 802-865-7300. We're here to help you on our mutual path to net zero energy.